If you guys will come forward, we have representatives of our Historic Landmark Commission here, chaired by Art DeMarrow, and we're going to hear a presentation, something we try to do every year to keep our work in context with our strong partnership. So, folks, have at it. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to acknowledge Commissioner Fish, who really, although he doesn't remember, it was his idea to have this session. Commissioner Leonard facilitated it, which I appreciate. Commissioner Fritz endorsed the idea, so thanks for the support and allowing us to do this. Well, the way I'd like to structure this, if I could, is we certainly want this to be a conversation, not a lecture. So I'll read some opening remarks and summarize some background information, and then just hit each of the objectives one at a time, and we'll pause after each one and have a chance to have some exchange on each one and work our way through it. And we'll spend as little as much time on any item as you wish. Never to be taken for granted is the civic pride carried by Portlanders who love their hometown. One of the greatest sources of this pride is our rich heritage, the distinctive history that has shaped our community spirit and determined our built environment. Our city has been blessed with rich man-made historic resources, including buildings, public spaces, and neighborhoods that complement the magnificent natural surroundings that provide our backdrop. Just as our community strives to be second to none in protection of our natural environment, so that it can be sustained responsibly for future generations, so does Portland need to be responsible to protect its irreplaceable built environment. You have established the Office of Planning and Sustainable Development to oversee the protection of our community's natural assets and to promote our city as exemplary and innovative in this arena. Similarly, City Council has appointed the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission as your agent to oversee and direct the stewardship of our historic built environment. We accept that responsibility as a serious charge and have embarked on an active course to fulfill that mission. It is in that spirit that we submit this report as the first annual installment of direct accountability of the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission to the Portland City Council. We want to start by touching on the historic preservation assets that our community has, which really puts us in a strong position to provide historic preservation support. We have a Landmarks Commission, which is represented by a number of professions: architecture, legal, history, transportation, development architecture. We provide design advice requests, which are voluntary. Of course, type 2 and 3 design reviews, and even type 4 demolition denial authority consult, and review and acceptance of National Register nominations. Our city has the special assessment incentive, in which 15-year frozen assessed values are offered on National Register properties, which provide financial incentives to restore these properties. And we have a number of support preservation organizations, such as the Bosco Milligan Foundation, Architectural Heritage Center, and we now have the resurrection of the Historic Preservation League of Oregon. We thought it'd be instructive to understand what our Landmarks Commission activity has been since 2001. Type 2 cases, which are staff reviews, have increased from an annual number of 65 in 2001 to 91 in 2008, so about a 50% increase in 8 years. The Type 2 staff reports, which are appealed to the Landmarks Commission, average less than 1.5 annually, so not very, very common. Type 3 reviews, which are the initial applications reviewed rather initially by the Landmarks Commission, have increased dramatically from 4 in the 2 years of 2001 to 2002 to 27 in 2007 and 2008. Design advice requests, which were introduced in 2005, now average 4 annually and are a great assist to applicants. Type 3 appeals to city councils, there have only been 4 this decade, 2 of which, interestingly, were the Northwest Irving Street Garage. And only once this decade has the Landmarks Commission been overturned by an appeal to City Council. And in this decade, a total of 84 Portland properties have been added to the National Register of Historic Places. The first preservation objective we'd like to touch on is maybe the most important point to make today. and that relates to the issue of sustainable preservation. As Portland officially adopts public policies, contemplates new initiatives, reorganizes bureaucratically, and builds a center for sustainability, it is crucial that the embrace of sustainability includes historic preservation principles and priorities. Historic preservation must be recognized as a centerpiece of sustainability and elevated as a core principle. The concept of destroying historic resources or threatening historic districts to make room for new green buildings must stop and be replaced with principles that promote and acknowledge resource efficiencies resulting from adaptive reuse through historic preservation. Accordingly, preservation should have a presence in the Oregon Sustainability Center, and financial incentives should be created similar to those for green initiatives. A small first step was a proposal from the Landmarks Commission to the city to establish a new policy for salvaging historic materials discarded by other city bureaus and state agencies. We asked the mayor and city council to direct the new Office of Planning and Sustainable Development to investigate how sustainable preservation policies can be incorporated into its work. One statistic, which I think might be instructive for you, relates to this issue of destruction of historic properties to be replaced by more energy efficient buildings. I'm sure you're all familiar with the concept of embodied energy, the energy used to create these buildings and eventually demolish them if that's what happens. Statistics show that it is a 65-year payback of lost energy. In other words, it'll take 65 years for a new building of similar size to save enough energy to replace the lost embodied energy of the building that was just thrown in the landfill.
That's an amazing statistic.
It is. And most buildings you would think are not going to survive beyond that 65 years. So what we have here is a vicious cycle of never gaining ground. Any thoughts on that? Any other questions? Number two has to do with the Central Portland Plan. The Central Portland Plan should incorporate historic preservation as a guiding principle of urban planning. And there's four issues here that I think are important, and some of which will be reminiscent of recent discussions you've had. And that is, there are conflicts which inherently develop between the drive for density and historic preservation. We certainly understand the urban planning advantages of densification in our city in support of mass transit and the sustainability benefits. But we think that perhaps in the last planning cycle that the density push was perhaps overzealous, because what we have found now is that there are a number of historic districts that have had code amendments or code language which is written, which calls for buildings which have a greater massing and height than would be compatible. So what we're finding happening is applications before Landmarks Commission for very large buildings which absolutely conform with code maximums, but which were unlikely to receive Landmarks Commission approval because they are disproportionate to the district and would be destructive to its character. And that's not fair to applicants to lead them on in a false direction. A lot of money is spent by the applicant, and a lot of staff time is wasted as well. So that leads to the drive for code consistency between historic design guidelines and planning codes. And we think it makes sense for the Central Portland Plan to create a conversation between the Planning Commission and the Landmarks Commission to try to bring code maximums in line with historic design review principles.
Why just in the Central City Plan? Why not in places like Irvington?
Oh, I misspoke. I meant the Central Portland Plan.
The entire Portland Plan, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We find this, a good example, if you're familiar with the Irvington Squire project at 15th and Northeast Hancock, this was a 75-foot height limit. The developer proposed a very beautifully designed building that was at first 75 feet. The next go-around brought it down to 65. But this is a neighborhood in Irvington which has 2-, 3-, 4-story buildings. And so the Landmarks Commission rejected it, asking that the building be lowered to 4 stories. The application was rejected, and the project will not go forward. But it was tens of thousands of dollars spent by the applicant. That project alone generated, I'm trying to think of how many citizens participated in that hearing, either in written or verbal form. I want to say 100 or more. So it was very controversial. We think that cooperation between the Landmarks Commission and the Planning Commission, not only in the planning process for the Central Portland Plan, but just even joint meetings. The Skidmore Old Town gave us one of the very first opportunities in anyone's memory for a joint hearing, and we'd like to see more of those. The charter does allow for a planning commissioner to sit as a member of the Landmarks Commission. Rick Michelson did that for a number of years, and we certainly would welcome to fill that chair with a planning commissioner and think that would help increase that communication.
We will.
Thank you. Number four would be addressing, the Skidmore Old Town, which has generated a lot of different questions, but one is the whole idea of surface parking lots and how they fit into the Central Portland Plan and their destructive forces in many neighborhoods, and so perhaps the Central Portland Plan can address how those parking lots can be encouraged to be developed.
May I just, since you've mentioned Skidmore Old Town twice, Mayor, I see that it's coming back to us on March 19th. Has there been a substantial reworking of that proposal that's coming to us? If so, has it gone back to Landmarks and planning? Are we going to get briefed? Can you give us a sense of that?
I can give you assurance that we will not be making that date.
Oh, okay. So we'll be pushing that off.
We'll be pushing that off.
Okay.
Okay. Number three is the historic resource inventory. 20 years ago, the city helped conduct a inventory of our historic resources, which sounds really formal and wonderful, but it was a little more informal than that. It was windshield tours of the various neighborhoods and identifying properties that appeared to be historically significant, ranking them as rank 1, 2, and 3. And we will tell you that it's not only is it 20 years old, which means there's a number of properties which have acquired additional historic status to be included, but some properties were included that probably should not have been, and there's a number that were missed. Historic resource inventories provide a wonderful resource for planners to make planning decisions regarding the city and understanding where these resources are located. When we at Landmarks review certain applications, one of the first questions we ask is, well, how is this property in relation to other historic properties in the area? This inventory has become useless. It's so old and inaccurate. And so we are asking that you consider funding an update of the historic resource inventory. We find that it will be helpful to both Landmarks Commission as well as the Planning Commission, in our opinion.
Are you familiar with what the Irvington Community Association is doing in trying to do update their inventory with volunteers? And is that a model that could be replicated in other neighborhoods?
I'm not familiar with that.
I understand that Irvington and Buckman have started these efforts. The problem is there's no coordination. There's no city staff person to assist with doing it in any sort of based on any sort of uniform procedures. And there are standards for deciding whether a building is contributing or not. And without applying those uniform standards, I'm not sure how coordinated the effort. One of the other things I would add to Art's point is this is what could help individual landowners learn about their buildings. I mean, this could be something that pops up on portlandmaps.com, and a person could see exactly what somebody who knew about historic preservation knew about a building, and that could spark an idea to get involved in a neighborhood association or get a building listed.
And I think the Bosco Milliken Foundation was helping with that inventory process, right? That was happening last year, that they had a request for interest from neighborhoods.
I don't know. But you're not currently.
We know what they're up to, but when we presented some workshops, but we're not in a position to provide them the labor and the people power to actually do those nominations.
But you did the workshops, right? And those were pretty well attended? So that's something that I could maybe help with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement in working with the Landmarks Commission and staff to see how we could, you know, in these tough budget times, how we could at least help with assessment for homeowner and resident and businesses to know more about what's in their neighborhoods, as well as the formal inventory.
We appreciate that. Our sense is that there is these historic neighborhoods are very passionate about protecting their resources, and our guess is that there would be many volunteers that would, if given a standard set of criteria, that they would provide a lot of that labor if we could just provide some central staff support.
Great, thank you.
Just as an aside, we'll mention that, and we're going to get to schools in a second, but Portland Public Schools spoke to Landmarks Commission several months ago, and as they're reviewing their portfolio, their real estate portfolio, one of the first things they did is ask, how significant are these schools that we have? And they started looking at asking staff here, can you help us determine which schools are worth preserving, which have significance? And all they had to rely on is this antiquated HRI. So they in fact, are going to expend their own dollars to do a historic resource inventory for just the Portland Public School property, which is a really wonderful thing. And so that's a great segue to the heritage schools. Number four, there are many public school properties that merit historic preservation protections, while the decision of the next few years will determine their fate. We think that, as you know, many of these schools are landmark buildings, not only architecturally, but also they are significant cisterns of heritage. I mean, many times children go to these schools whose parents and grandparents went to these schools. In addition, from an urban planning standpoint, these schools often are the sun in the solar system for these neighborhoods. They really are defining for many of them. So we consider it critical to maintain these schools. No doubt that they need substantial improvements, mechanical systems, seismic upgrades, the whole shooting match. But we think it should be one of the most it's one of the most important issues in preservation, and also we consider it a sustainability issue as well. We're talking about 90 schools here in the district, so to be able to save that, we think makes it is a consistent statement or proclamation on behalf of a city that wishes to have the highest green perception possible. We also think this, and so we're working when we have been advising Portland Public School District, which has been extremely receptive, by the way, has taken bus trips to Seattle to view some of the historic schools there that have been saved, seen how spectacular these spaces are that are generated, and are hoping to duplicate that here. So they certainly seem on the right track. We would like to extend that passion to our friends at Portland State also, which has a inventory of historic buildings on their campus. They just saved one and did a very beautiful renovation, but they have never done an inventory of the significant historic buildings, and we have taken the initiative to meet with PSU to ask them if they would entertain undertaking that. Number five is special assessment. Again, special assessment is a statewide initiative which allows owners of National Register properties to freeze their assessed valuation for 15 years. It provides a substantial real estate tax savings with the theory that in exchange for submitting a renovation plan for your property, that savings then can be reinvested into the property. Right now, there is there's only a one-year term which is offered for this 15 years, and the state legislature has offered the opportunity for a 15-year renewal term. So right now, if I, Carrie, would you update?
The renewal opportunity is identified as Senate Bill 192 for anyone who wanted to follow up. My understanding is that it has not been formally submitted to any committee at this time, so there's still opportunity to get involved in that, and we intend to do so.
And Nicholas Sterin serves on that committee as one of the representatives for the city of Portland, and came to the Landmarks Commission to get feedback regarding requirements that we would wish to impose for a renewal term. And our understanding is that the state legislature is asking that the Landmarks Commission provide a forum for citywide input regarding offering a second renewal term.
Art, I'm sorry for being thick, but when you say renewal term, are you talking about a bonus 15 years or reauthorizing the 15-year initial freeze?
Thank you for that question. No, it'd be a second 15-year term. So right now, you freeze your valuation for 15 years, implement the preservation plan that you've submitted that has been approved, and then right now it goes back on the tax rolls, and this is offering the opportunity to impose another 15-year term, however, at a stepped-up valuation based upon the current value at that at the initiation.
And what's the quid pro quo on that?
Explain.
Well, so the original 15 years is to presumably create some flexibility to make the investment in getting the building up to historic standards or whatever. So the renewal term, what does the public get as a benefit from that?
Yes. The way that the presumption is that there'll be additional renovation that'll be done, but what will that fall under? The current proposal states that this renewal term could only be offered if the improvements are in the area of sustainability, ADA, accessibility, or seismic upgrades. So we could have a debate about whether those are three categories worth singling out or not, but that's what's on the table right now.
And do you need state legislation to enable the city to do that?
The state legislature has to authorize the allowability of a renewal term, but each local government, thank you, has to ratify it to allow it to be implemented. So there's nothing for you to do on this point other than wait for the process to proceed and know that we expect that we'll be coming before you to see if we can present an acceptable renewal term structure that you would find approvable. Number six, update of historic design guidelines. I guess I'll get a dollar for every time I say Skidmore Old Town, so maybe I'll be rich at the end of the meeting. We've all gone through the baptism of Skidmore Old Town, design guidelines that were generated in 1987, and we went through this extensive process to replace those guidelines. They were, I will tell you, very difficult for applicants to use because of their vagaries, the out-of-date nature. They were difficult for us as Landmarks Commissioners to use for the design review process. And so through use of a private consultant in cooperation with the Planning Commission, new guidelines were generated, not to pat ourselves on the back, but we seem to be getting much acclaim that they are very well-written, very clear, and would become a model for other neighborhood design guidelines. So eventually that process will end for Skidmore Old Town, but we want to advise you that right behind them in queue are a number of other neighborhoods which need exactly the same process, most notably Lair Hill, where those guidelines were created in 1980, the Yamhill District created in 87, Ladd's 1990, the East Portland Grand Avenue in 94, and the Northwest 13th Avenue District in 96. So, of course, all that takes is money and staff time, of which, of course, there's an unlimited supply. But
so where is the East Portland Grand Avenue District? We don't usually think of Grand Avenue being in East Portland now.
It is. It's that the MLK Grand Avenue on the east side. I don't remember the north and south boundaries for that.
I think that. It's OHSU, or no, OMSI on the south side, I want to say, and I think Gleason or something.
Yeah, or up to the convention center.
Convention center, I think. Thank you.
Yeah. By the way, maybe that process becomes less expensive because having gone through it with Skidmore, I would think we will have learned some lessons, and also we could actually plagiarize a bit from that because there will be a number of things which, at least a format, perhaps we could plagiarize. Number seven is heritage tourism. I'm going to read this. Historic preservation is oft times painted as inconsistent with economic development. However, nothing could be further from the truth. Many communities across the country, Boston, Philadelphia, Chicago, San Francisco, Sacramento, to name a few, do an excellent job of promoting their historic resources as sites and experiences for out-of-towners. We would like Travel Portland and other related interests to maximize the potential of marketing our historic landmarks and districts as destinations worth visiting and financially supporting. Especially in the year of Oregon's 150th anniversary, there are many opportunities available for us to showcase the heritage of our state's most significant city. I can tell you, as somebody who offices in at the corner of Cooch and NATO, I am constantly seeing tour groups walk by, getting tours of Skidmore Old Town, and we would just like to see more of this. We think Portland has an untapped resource here that could be promoted.
Art, just on that point, I saw something in the paper recently about a Street of Eames houses, or it was it's a program where every year you can go tour architecturally distinctive modern homes of a certain kind. So I asked Myla Greisen if she could pencil it in my calendar. It turned out that it sells out in one day. Mm. There's like 1,000 tickets, and there's
Street of what?
Eames, the designer, E-A-M-E-S.
Yeah,
he designed chairs, modern style chairs.
But it's a tour of architecturally distinctive homes in Portland of this style. And she said it sold out in one day. So just to your point about cultural heritage tourism, there isn't a huge appetite, including people here who are interested.
Well, I live in Irvington, and maybe some of you have been on the Irvington home tour. My home has been on it. And they sell 1,000 tickets, and it's the big fundraiser for that neighborhood. It's a very popular tour. So I think your point is correct. Might be interesting to think about doing something similar to that for historic commercial buildings, perhaps. Might be an interesting idea. The number 8 is the threatened landmarks list. The National Trust.
Why is the Customs House on that list?
Okay.
I thought there was some proposal for the French American School or someone to take that over. Is there some consequence of one of those proposed transfers that threatens the building?
No, it's a proposal I'm involved with. So it's the International School.
International School.
Correct. The GSA has been trying to dispose of the Custom House and give it to a new owner which can love it. For a few years now, you might remember they had a aborted effort a few years ago. And they're doing a good job maintaining it, but if it's awarded to the International School, then it can certainly come off this list because they're going to be a qualified entity to renovate it. But if it doesn't, it'll go through a GSA disposition process. And if a proper entity purchases it and renovates it, then it certainly should come off the list. It's just, let's just say that it's on the list because it's such a significant historic property. We would consider it one of the most significant properties, and we'd like to get it out of the hands of somebody who's not going to further invest in it, such as GSA, and get into the hands of a user.
Is it designated as a National Historic Landmark?
It is.
Good.
It's a very challenging building.
It is. It's got a terrible load factor, meaning, only about 55 or 60% of it is usable. I mean, the grand space, which makes it so architecturally wonderful, makes it so functionally difficult. It also needs seismic retrofit. It's a very heavy building, and it's an expensive seismic retrofit. There's limited changes that can be made to accommodate new uses. So that would be another reason we're concerned about it.
I'm glad you're working on it.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Centennial Mills, it's not a coincidence that it's at the top of our list. A comment on that, and we understand that it's gone through a process, an RFP process, and a development agreement has been signed with a developer from California for what is primarily a retail-oriented development. And that's all wonderful, but here's a couple of concerns. One is that particular development proposes demolishing about half of the complex, which in our opinion is a concern because the story of the project is the complex itself, how the buildings interrelate to each other. So once you lose half of them, that's a problem. Second of all is it's an adaptive reuse, which does not place the buildings on the National Register. So from our perspective, which is perhaps more purist than some, that it's a fairly liberal interpretation has been overlaid to the design. The third thing is the market itself. I suspect the project would have moved faster if the economy had been a different state. So that's a concern, which really leads to the fourth concern, and that is these are buildings which have been vacant and deteriorating for a long, long time. And what often happens in these cases is delays happen after delays, and meanwhile the buildings continue to deteriorate. And at some point someone stands up and says, you know, it's really in bad shape, and the deterioration itself becomes a bit of a condemnation. And I would doubt that the Portland Development Commission is investing a substantial sum of money at this point to stabilize those buildings. The last time I was in them, there was substantial dry rot and water infiltration, et cetera, and I suspect that's continuing. So it's important that it be on the watch list. I'll run through these and just make a sentence or two about each. Portland Public Schools, we've really talked about special highlighted concern for Washington High School. Their PPS may use that as a swing school for as they close schools to do renovation. They may move students there temporarily is one thing that's out there, or it may just go through an RFP process. But it's empty and it's being vandalized severely right now. It's become quite an eyesore, unfortunately. Jefferson's on the list. There's been a lot of changes that have been made to Jefferson which have jeopardized its integrity. In addition to that, there have been some plans that have shown up on the internet in which some outside architects were hired that didn't think very much of it, that involved demolition of Jefferson, advocating that it was not going to be productive to renovate it. So there's special concern there.
So your recommendation is that both those buildings are significant and should be retained?
Highly significant.
Thank you.
Skidmore Old Town, there's another dollar. The Northwest Cultural Center, this is the building on Northwest Everett and 18th. Mm-hmm. Is that right? We have an owner who maybe is not in a financial position to renovate the building, and it's a very important community use property, but it needs a major investment and is architecturally, I think, quite beautiful. The Simon facade is, if you all remember where the old Cooch Street Fish House was, there was that parking lot next to it that has the old Western facade. It has that freestanding building facade there. Well, that site is listed as a historic National Register structure, but that is one of the five opportunity sites. And so if a tall building was put on that site, we are doubtful that that facade would be retained. The PSU historic buildings are on here until we hear from PSU, maybe the willingness to go ahead and do a historic resource inventory. Buildings that I will confess that I have not seen, but Richard Engelman, Commissioner Engelman, has pointed out, is the Brooklyn Roundhouse and Locomotives. Perhaps someone on the council is familiar with that property. These are near Southeast Holgate and 18th Avenue, threatened by a Union Pacific Railroad yard expansion, and the locomotives, three of which are city-owned, and two of which are on the National Register and are in operating condition. But they're threatened by neglect and indifference and unawareness.
But which of us is in charge of locomotives?
I think it's the Parks Bureau.
Is it Parks?
Parks, not transportation?
Owns the locomotives.
Interesting.
We take a very broad view of our jurisdiction.
Actually, transportation gave them to you because we couldn't afford them.
Next on the list is the Union Station, and certainly the Portland Development Commission is working hard to take care of this property. They've done a phased rehab on it, doing little pieces that they can budget for. It badly needs a new roof, I believe. I think that's next on the list, but don't quote me on that. But it's just such a significant landmark in town and is in the center of an area that I know is going to be subject to lots of redevelopment visioning. The Union Pacific Railroad Albina Smokestack, located in the UP Railroad's Albina Yard, is on the National Register, and that's of concern. The Portland Gas and Coke building, this is the building you probably don't know by name, but if you drive on Highway 30 going to the St. John's Bridge, it's that wonderful building to the right towards the river that's in the middle of the tank farm. It's a Superfund site, and it's a magnificent building that we would love to see saved, but its environmental hazardous surroundings are threatening.
So Northwest Natural owns that building? Or?
I thought it was PGE.
Is it Northwest?
I apologize. But
yeah, I think it's the original Northwest Natural building. So they still own it?
Yes.
Is anything going on in it? I think it's...
I don't think so.
Spooky. Looks like a hopper. Art, on the smokestack that you mentioned, if that was threatened with removal or demolition, would we have enough notice to weigh in on that and possibly suggest a relocation? Because it is a kind of an iconic thing, and I suspect that there'd be places in the city that would welcome it, even if it was no longer functioning just as a landmark.
It's listed on the National Register, therefore it'd be subject to the Type 4 process. The final one is the Morris Marks House and the Dory Court Apartments, late 19th century Italianate house at 1134 Southwest 12th. This is near PSU and the adjacent apartment building, both low-scale buildings in an area of the city that is now zoned for high-rises. The owners are interested in redeveloping the property, but it would be expensive to relocate the structures. Next, number 9, archaeology.
Oh, you get a dollar from me.
Okay, thank you.
Archaeology, you get a dollar from me, Art.
Good, thank you. I'll read an introduction. The city of Portland should develop a central coordinated approach, a strategic plan to manage its heritage resources or for ensuring it in compliance with federal, state, and local laws and regulations regarding the identification and proper treatment of historic and cultural districts, properties, objects, and other archaeological resources that may be affected by city undertakings. So this has been a bit of an afterthought, and I think that the attention has surfaced because of the whole Cindy's bookstore issue at 4th and Burnside. One thing that we will be better equipped to take on this issue because you have used your wisdom to appoint Paul Salomano, who's an archaeologist, to the Landmarks Commission to fill our current vacancy. And so we will certainly ask him to help coordinate efforts in this regard.
If I could just ask the mayor, in light of the testimony we got from Ken Ames and everybody, is it the intention of planning, that as they do the Portland plan, to have someone actually dedicated to the archaeology?
Yes, and to develop a set of protocols, workable, but protocols in place to make sure that as we develop and redevelop the city, that we're not missing the opportunity, not destroying the opportunity to learn from our archaeological past. So that's one of the work items on the Portland plan.
Number 10, streetscape and right-of-way design guidelines. As it stands now, when we have design guidelines for our historic districts, they really speak to the buildings themselves, but not the streetscape. And streetscapes are important. What kind of street furniture is used, whether street trees are appropriate, types of paving, width of sidewalks, etc. So it's something we would like to take up and to do some research as to what is done in other cities and perhaps incorporate some streetscape design guidelines for particular districts. Number 11 is a kind of a catch-all administrative objective. Number 1, you've knocked off the list in filling the current vacancy. Number 2 is we've taken the initiative to try to improve the coordination between landmarks and other city agencies. PDC deals with a lot of historic resources, and we think that we should be in communication with them to make sure that they are pursuing plans, whether it's new development or redevelopment, that are in concert with our goals. PDOT certainly has been before us with HP issues, Parks and Rec also. What we do now is just simply ask representatives of these agencies to come before us maybe once a year just to kind of ask what they're working on that might interface with us and offer our advice where we can. cooperation with SHPO. We've recently, we've had two instances in which people who had certain agendas would go to the State Historic Preservation Office in Salem to get SHPO's position on certain preservation matters in Portland, and then use that as a hammer against the local Landmarks Commission, which is your appointed agency to make recommendations on HP issues. And so we've started conversations with Roger Roper from SHPO to ensure that SHPO isn't stepping on our toes. I'm sure you wouldn't want the governor putting pressure on you for local decisions that are under your jurisdiction, and we feel the same. Very important to provide more coordination between BDS and OPSD at this point. You know, at our commission hearings always have staff members from both BDS and planning, and we do sometimes have conflict as surfaced in Skidmore Old Town. So we'd like to have that conversation. Probably once Susan Anderson gets her head above water, we'd probably like to start that discussion. And then going back to Landmarks Commission and Planning Commission communication and cooperation, we really think that's important and make that a high priority. So we end with the budget request. We've submitted to Commissioner Leonard a request for a mere $440,000 to fund some of our needs, and we understand that your resource are limited, but just so that you know, when such resources can be made available, we would love to do that historic resource inventory update. PPS is taking care of their own update, so that saves a lot of money. We would love to be able to assist neighborhoods who wish to nominate their neighborhoods for National Register district nominations. Irvington, Buckman, Laurelhurst, Brooklyn, and Reed are five very active neighborhoods that would like to become historic districts. But you know, you have to have an awful lot of bake sales to raise the money necessary to hire consultants to do that work. And so we thought perhaps city money could be made available, perhaps on a matching basis, to help encourage these neighborhoods to step forward. It's only in the best interest of the city that these historic neighborhoods apply for those sorts of protections and design review. Landmarks Commission training, that would be, not that we don't know what we're doing, but it would be nice to learn more. And finally, historic preservation staff. A dream of ours would be to have somebody at the city be the historic preservation officer that would be the one-stop shopping for people who need historic preservation issues answered. We're working with Tim Heron, who's now taken the helm on behalf of staff, and perhaps we can at least get a planner who specializes in historic preservation assigned to design review cases that come before Landmarks Commissions who have a deeper background, perhaps, in historic issues.
So you don't even have one staff now?
Do you want to speak to that, Tim?
Sure. Tim Heron, Bureau of Development Services. We have many staff, and that's ironically part of the problem. There's not one point person designated to go to that can focus on that speciality of receiving any and all historic design review types of calls related to preservation or landmark status. Typically, that role does fall on someone like myself in BDS, but we also have counterparts that work for the now consolidated BPS. And I think in the public's eye, that's confusing. And that if we actually have a designated historic preservation officer, there's potentially a clarity in that message to the public and advocacy of that person's direction. That makes sense.
Yes. We do that with existing staff? Is there some way to reconfigure our current?
Already thinking about it. Okay. And I've started that conversation with the chair, and I think it's a matter of how we structure that contact.
I'd be very interested in pursuing that.
Be more efficient to have that mm-hmm. rather than. I think that used to be that way when it was housed in the old Bureau of Planning.
And that's
somebody.
And that I think has created a sense of confusion. Who do you call? And if you've made enough calls, you know that there's probably four people that can get you the answer.
I just call you.
When planning was doing, before we split development services off of planning, there was somebody in planning who was the person that I used to call for historic
correct.
Resources.
You're so absolutely correct.
Even if there was one person in planning and one person in development services, who's the point person? I mean, obviously that's you, for those who know, but designating a person wouldn't take additional resources.
I think, yeah, exactly.
So we'll work together on that. I like the idea.
Art, could I add one thing for your future list in under Roman numeral 5? Because you have the 15-year renewal term. I think not this session, but the next session of the legislature, we'll be talking about the renewal of the Oregon Cultural Tax Credit. And since it's arts, culture, and heritage, and many of our heritage groups get grants from the Cultural Trust, we want to make sure that your voice is heard on the renewal of that tax credit. I think it'll be in 2 years, but just to have it on your radar.
Will do. Thank you. So that completes our report. Any questions? Or?
So I just wondered, Tim, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but is this an opportunity for you to talk about this broader kind of conversation we're going to have with the design community and whatnot in the upcoming couple of months based on some of the feedback we've got, or do you want to take a rain check on that?
I love being put on the spot.
So we've had the unfortunate loss of Jeff Joslin, who was head of staff there for a long time, and now Tim has stepped in as in a temporary position. But we've been doing a lot of interaction with the design community, and I'm assuming the historic preservation community as well. And we're talking about some forums that you might just like to inform the council about, public forums that we're going to. He and I and some of the managers are going to be going to get feedback from the community about what we can do to improve the services.
Yeah, I think the timing of the Landmarks Commission's presentation of this report, not just in, frankly, what I see is how thorough it was done. It was a pleasure to read on my part. I think what we'll do is implementing a simple, similar format with the Design Commission is something that and I think we haven't done in the past, and frankly, I think has led to kind of a business as usual over time. And I think what we found recently is perhaps maybe a slight disengagement with the design community particularly, and maybe in some aspects the historic community and how we do what we do, whether it's related to design guidelines and how that intermeshes with the zoning code, which is something that Art talked about. I get my dollar, Skidmore Old Town. And then the other also just having to be an understanding of the process and how we do it. We did this a similar type of forum in 2001. It actually generated more process, believe it or not, that was supported by the development community that improved the end run. Commissioner DeMuro just spoke to the design advice request process. That did not exist before 2001. It's a voluntary opportunity to bring a proposal in before you do the design. The bare bones, the basics, you have a pro forma. You have some massing diagrams. You have some maybe red flags that you want to put in front of the review body that will review them at the end of a three-month-long formal process. So the forums are very useful. So we're re-looking at putting that out there again, and it's about time. It's been about 8 years. I think it's overdue. I think it's an opportunity to set it up on a more regular basis, much like I think a more regular basis of this commission being in front of you all to talk about what they've been doing. It's getting busier out there, and that's a good thing. And in time of this economy, it's a perfect time to kind of take a breath, rally these horses, streamline the process, but also reach out to the community because I think they know and see the light at the end of the tunnel, and we want to be ready when it hits us that we could just rock and roll to the next improvement in our economy and what we do in Portland.
Nice. Thanks.
Art, could I just ask you one other question?
Anything.
Is the Made in Oregon sign before you now?
March 9th.
So you have a public hearing on that?
Correct.
And and then your decision will occur at some point. What's your timeline for a decision?
Well, I mean, a vote could take place that.
Could take place on the 9th, or it could be continued to another meeting, which would maybe be the second meeting in March.
I see.
So. Yeah.
No, that one's probably going to get canceled, but it'd be April, probably move to April.
And any action that you take could potentially come to us for a quasi-judicial?
Yes.
Could be appealed.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
So we have one person signed up to testify, and we have 6 minutes left. Thank you. Very illuminating, and look forward to having you back soon.
Thank you. We're grateful for the time.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Kathy Galbraith.
Thank you for sitting so patiently. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. You just have to give us only a first and last name. And
what an interesting subject.
You have 3 minutes.
Down and listen to. I'm Kathy Galbraith. I'm the executive director of the Bosco Milligan Foundation. We own and operate the Architectural Heritage Center at 701 Southeast Grand Avenue, which is in the heart of the Grand Avenue East Portland National Register Historic District, which was designated in the late 70s to recognize it as the heart of the original city of East Portland, which annexed to the city of Portland in 1894. We're in the oldest building in Portland Central East Side, and we have served the needs of more than 45,000 people in public historic preservation education programs since we started doing programs in the mid-1990s. We're a local partner organization with the National Trust for Historic Preservation, and we were complimented with the award of a matching grant for their Partners in the Field program this past year. And one of the things we said we were going to start out by doing was a preservation needs assessment around the city of Portland. And so in October and November, we conducted 5 quadrant-based forums around the city. And a lot of people took the time to come and attend meetings, talk to us, fill out a questionnaire, and primarily people had, we're synthesizing, tallying. We sent a draft report to our board of directors on Friday, and we'll have the formal report ready for public release in about 2 weeks. But people expressed over and over again their concern about new developments not fitting in well in traditional neighborhoods and in commercial areas of the city. Very, very great deal of concern about the inadequacies of the historic resources inventory that Art talked about that dates back to 1983. How we increase density in neighborhoods without destroying the neighborhood character that is really the strength of our city and its really beloved neighborhoods. A great deal of concern about Portland's public schools, and we know the school district has recently stepped up and has issued an RFP for a historic schools assessment. Just a couple of real quick observations. We want the ability to review and approve or deny or modify applications for local landmarks designation and alterations to buildings. When we want the private sector to participate and accept regulation on the part of the public sector, we should try to make that easy for people. Landmarks application fee for the city of Portland is $2,900. The city of Seattle's fee is zero. And many cities and counties apply no fees to these kinds of applications when they want the ability to be able to review and approve or deny applications or modify designs. There's been some talk about the Planning Bureau staff. There are 2 people on the Bureau of Planning that we recognize as having historic preservation qualifications. The city of Seattle has 8 full-time employees, including a longtime historic preservation officer. I had the privilege of being the director of Historic Seattle for 5 years before I returned to Portland to be the director of the Bosco Milligan Foundation. And I can tell you, Seattle does not do everything right, and there are many things that we do much better. But we really do think that the investment in historic preservation in Portland is warranted to be increased. Preservation in this city, especially in the urban renewal districts, is really economics-based. And if we want to continue that, we really need to provide incentives. When demolition denial was restored back to the Portland's Preservation Code in 2004, there were a lot of conversations with the development community, the preservation community, about the need for incentives, not where the city writes a check, but where the city provides regulatory relief, a property tax relief like we do for the transit-oriented developments, the affordable housing projects, et cetera. And we really do need to return to the conversation about incentives. And there was a lot of talk about that around an alternative strategy for Skidmore Old Town. I didn't come to get a dollar. But that is really the biggest preservation issue in the city of Portland in 20 years, and it's probably why so many of you have heard from so many people about the issue, because it's the heart of the city's founding as the city that it is today. So I think I've taken up my 6 minutes. I'm just really happy to be here. We thank the world of the Landmarks Commission and anything we can do in the nonprofit sector to participate and be supportive and work with you about building that economic engine of heritage tourism, we're more than willing to do.
Thank you, and thanks again for being here. Really appreciate it, and all the work that you do.
Pleasure.
Thank you. All right, council is going to take a 7-minute break.
Got to vote.
7 minutes.
Vote on this resolution first.
Was there a resolution?
Yes.
I apologize. I thought I was reporting. We accepting it?
Yes.
All right. Unless there's additional council discussion, Carla, will you please call the roll?
Fritz, I really appreciate all your work and the volunteers and staff and the supporting the Landmarks Commission, and it's so important. I'm glad you brought this report to us today, the statistic about it taking 65 years to have the same energy savings as saving an existing building is, I think, one that we should all remember. Aye.
Fish.
Well, that was an excellent report. I hope it does become an annual event, and I know you have a champion in Commissioner Leonard, and thank you, Randy, for your leadership on this. And I learned a lot this afternoon, and we look forward to supporting your good work going forward. Aye.
Saltzman.
Great report. I do hope this becomes an annual event. It's very important for us to sort of keep abreast. It can be overwhelming to try to understand everything and get the full flavor of what's going on. But I do appreciate Art's continued leadership of the Landmarks Commission. I think I roped him into that back when Mayor Katz was mayor and we were looking for somebody. And Art, you've risen to the top and continue to provide fine leadership. Thank you.
Leonard?
I, too, appreciate the report, and I do think that maybe we should just focus on staff to make sure we do this annually and have it just be a regular update, because I think it's important to make sure we keep the frame of reference of everything we do up here appropriate to what it is you focus on, and it's something I believe in. Aye.
Adams.
Thank you. Got a lot of work to do. I see a lot of opportunities in the Portland plan as well. To move forward on the issues that you raised. Thank you. Aye. Item passes. We're going to take a 7-minute recess.
Not 6, but 7.